I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, one of our stories causes a stir in the blogosphere. But first, it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are opinion writer and blogger Jimmy Israel, Oliver Wang, a cultural critic and professor, ESPN producer Alvin Patrick, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. Let's see, I hear they want to talk about this week's presidential debates, allegations that a big-name sports star sponsors illegal dogfights, and the debate about race in baseball. We're a little short on time this week, so we're really just getting more of a trim. So I may jump in, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How's it going?
It's going good.
Good, man.
All right, well, let's talk about how we got double dosed this week with the latest round of debates. And you know what? While Democrats bickered, Oliver, you got to admit, the Republicans put on a good roadshow. So far, how do you kind of score the debates overall?
Well, I think on this last round, it seems like the odd as it is to say, it looks like the GOP is having a little bit more fun with this right now.
Yeah, Alvin, what's up with the Democrats backbiting each other, man? Was that my imagination? Did you see the same thing?
No, that's exactly what's been happening, Jimmy. And, you know, basically they all really feel the same way, which is we want to get on the other side of the war. And it's kind of difficult to differentiate who's against the war more.
Ruben?
Now, I agree with both those comments. I think that this is the time to throw elbows. This is the time for folks in both camps to really differentiate themselves. Obviously, the Democrats are struggling with the war. Republicans are struggling with immigration. But I agree. I think the Democrats were a lot more serious. Republicans were having a lot more fun. And I think this is really a three-person race on both sides. On the Democrats, it's all about Hillary and Edwards and Obama. And on the Republican sides, it's all about Romney, McCain, and Giuliani. And so if you're one of those three, you got to do everything you can to elbow the other two out of the way.
Well, speaking about throwing bows, now, Wolf Blister asked if English should be the official language, and he drew some interesting answers. Let's hear what Obama had to say.
Everybody is going to learn to speak English if they live in this country. The issue is not whether or not future generations of immigrants are going to learn English.
And your boy, Mike Gravel, kind of broke it down like this.
We speak English. That doesn't mean we can't encourage other languages. I speak French and English. And people speak Spanish and English, but the official language of the United States of America is English.
Now, Ruben, I know you wrote in a recent column that, you know, the whole question was irrelevant.
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, it was irrelevant because of what Obama said. He said, I'm not going to answer the question. The question is silly. It's a distraction from the real issue. If you want to talk about immigration, talk about immigration. But it really doesn't matter what language these folks speak when they come here. It needs to be about them coming here legally. Gravel is very much a part of the problem because it's people like that who try to make English the official language. That really ends up dividing the country. This becomes a loyalty oath. I'm not going to tell you English isn't important. English is enormously important, but Latinos don't need that force-fed down their throat.
Well, okay, I mean, that's a good point. But you know what, O-Dub, here's me. I think people just want to know where the point of saturation is. I mean, at what point are we as Americans going to have to be bilingual? You know what I'm saying? How did you read it?
I can't remember which of the politicians pointed it out, but most of the world is bilingual. America is one of the only countries in terms of major industrialized nations whose society can afford to be monolingual, and arrogantly so. And I think where America should be moving towards is not towards, you know, enforcing this idea of a single language, but we really need to be in part of the conversation, literally, linguistically, with the rest of the world.
Let's move on and talk about the Denver Post quoting Barack Obama saying that the Bush administration has done nothing to defuse the quiet riot of black discontent in this country. Even alluding to, like, race riots, like now and past and maybe in the future. Now, check this out, Alvin. I don't know about you and what listservs you're on, but I didn't get any memo about any revolution. I mean, is Barack Obama, like, trying to make an important point, or is he trying to blacken his image?
Well, you know, if you think about it, he was talking in front of a mostly black audience down at Hampton, if I'm not mistaken. And to be quite honest, I am an Obama fan, but I have noticed that he does sort of, change his linguistic qualities a touch when he gets in front of different audiences, which I guess every politician does. It's just that he was supposed to be that breath of fresh air that we all were supposed to love. And I think, you know, a riot simmering, I'm not so sure about that.
But this that whole Du Boisian flip-flop, you know, where you're wearing a dashiki 1 minute and you're wearing Brooks Brothers the next. Oliver, I mean, I love Obama, too. That's my dude. You know, he owes me money. But how do you feel about him flip-flopping?
I mean, I don't know if it's a flip-flop. I do think that he's being very strategic in how he wears his hats. And, you know, this is just kind of, you know, this goes back to the whole issue of, is Barack black enough for the black electorate? And I think he's definitely learning how to speak to his audiences.
Okay, well, you know what? Speaking of switching hats, let's switch the game up a little bit and talk about sports drama. Now, your boy, Atlanta's Mike Vick, may catch a case for hosting a dogfighting operation at his house. Well, not at his house, but a house he owned, right? Now, he pleads ignorance, but O-Dub, how do you not know about something like that? I mean, people are fighting dogs at your pad. I
mean, the mess alone. What? The mess would be the first tip. Right.
This is what I'm saying. Oliver, do you think they're picking on him?
It's hard to say. I mean, Vick obviously has run into problems in the past, so it's, you know, one could read perhaps this is just the latest in the line of troubles, or maybe that people are really out to get him in a sense because he is so one of the, you know, very few visible black quarterbacks out there, and there's that issue as well. I think it's hard to say though.
Ruben?
Yeah, I don't know if I can't see the racial angle in this, but I think just when I thought I had the whole list of unsavory activity that a professional athlete could get into, you know, off hours, you know, maybe the NFL, maybe all the professional sports teams need to lay down the law in terms of what you do off season, out of hours, off the field, you know, and how it reflects badly on the team or the sport.
Can I say something?
Absolutely, Michelle.
I don't get it. I mean, is this in the, isn't this part of the, like, the don't be stupid part of your contract?
I got a clause like that in my contract.
I don't get it. I mean, first of all, it's illegal every state but two, and I don't get the appeal anyway. Anyway, I'm out.
No, but the don't be stupid part of your contract normally has to do with, you know, jet skiing or you know, going on a motorcycle or jumping off cliffs. This kind of thing I don't think was on anyone's radar. And one of the things that people fail to realize is that athletes are competitive on all levels. Now mm-hmm, dogfighting mm-hmm. is really mm-hmm. connected to gambling.
I don't buy that. If Vic wants to be competitive, let him get in the ring with the dog.
Okay, Ruben. Okay, what way to interject? You know, man. Let's move forward. Look at something else in the world of sports. Now, you know, up in Detroit, your boy Gary Sheffield told GQ magazine that Latinos make better baseball players because they are more docile than black players. Now, wait a second. Now, and then, yo, then one of his Latino teammates kind of agreed with him, saying a lot of players are afraid of, you know, speaking their mind. Ruben,
it's not like you're gonna go argue with the manager; they're gonna deport you. They have so much riding on this in terms of their family back home. If they were to lose their job and had to go home voluntarily, there would be nothing to go home to. So there's all that. We heard from about a dozen or so Latino players, managers, folks in management right. who just thought this was outright a racist comment. If you can wrap your head around the idea that a black person can be racist, then here you go.
Well, you know what? Now, listen, you're my dude, right?
You got to tell me, what part of that are you going to argue with?
Well, no. Check this out. What I'm suggesting to you is that, you know, what Gary Sheffield was trying to say, he said it in the most ignorant way imaginable, which is, you know, that black people have been here a long time, and we don't take no stuff off the man. You know, and cats haven't been here that long. Cats haven't been here that long. I kind of shook, like, oh, man, well, if I say such and so, next thing you know, I'm back on Southwest, back to the island. I don't know.
The notion that African-Americans, quote, don't take stuff off the man. A second ago, we were talking about Barack Obama being careful about the audience he caters to when he's speaking to white folks.
Well, he's not a real black man, according to some.
Wait, okay.
There
okay,
goes my
well.
Analogy right out the window. Yeah, see, I think this is about Sheffield trying to make the case. Somebody up there is physically trying to keep out African-Americans from baseball. That is a stretch. I think 20 years ago, white folks used to go around, to some degree they still do, go around, and every time they don't get a job promotion, it's because it went to a black guy. You know, a black guy through affirmative action took my job. And right. now, 20 years later, you have African-Americans going around saying, I lost my job to a Latino. Okay, it's the same poison. Americans need to stop that. They need to stop blaming other people for the fact that you don't have enough African-Americans in baseball. They're not blaming basketball. They're blaming Latinos. Everybody wants somebody to blame.
Alvin, you are our sports guy. Busty.
Yeah. Baseball is the most difficult sport of all the professional sports. The toughest thing to do in all of sports is to hit a 95-mile-per-hour fastball. So hand-eye coordination is the key to everything. And so it's not like you can just be tall or and not play basketball or mm-hmm. be broad and play football.
What's sad about this is I grew up a San Francisco Giants fan growing up in the 70s, mm-hmm. and my heroes on the Giants team were black players like Willie McCovey. And for African-Americans who have such a proud tradition in baseball, to start ceding that territory, you mm-hmm. know, as if there was no Willie Mays, there is no Barry Bonds, there are none of these folks who are out there, this is not the ground that African-Americans want to cede because they have a lot mm-hmm. to be proud of in baseball.
let's move on and talk about Paris Hilton. Apparently, you know, she was let out the joint on, you know, house arrest, for some unspecified medical reason. She got a clamp on her leg, you know, one of those things. What are those things called, Michelle? Help
ankle
me out.
Bracelet.
Ankle bracelet. Like you don't know.
Michelle.
Yeah. Like you don't know.
Why would
Michelle know?
I think she was trying to get some street cred.
Did she have tattooed tears now? I haven't seen the press photo before leaving jail.
All right, fellas. Well, it's that time again, and we got to wrap up the shop. I want to thank everybody for showing up. Ruben, my man, as usual.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
O-Dub, we building that positive thing.
Hey, long-time listener, first-time caller.
That dude, Alvin from ESPN.
Jimmy, keep sports alive.
And I'm your boy, Jimmy Is. I got to throw it to my girl, Michelle Martin.
Well, thank you, Jimmy. Jimmy Israel joined us from Barton Voice and Sound in Louisville, Kentucky. He writes for the opinion page of the Lexington Herald Leader. Ruben Navarrete joined us from KPBS in San Diego. He writes for the San Diego Union Tribune and CNN.com. Alvin Patrick is a coordinating producer for ESPN's First Take. He joined us from his office in Bristol, Connecticut. And Oliver Wong is a cultural critic and a sociology professor at Cal State Long Beach. He joined us from our NPR West studio in Culver City. You can find links to all of our barbershop guests at our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us at the barbershop today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, Michelle.
Yep.